if you're innovating, creating, or making a difference.
This show is for you. Welcome to Over Coffee. I'm Dot Cannon. Here on Over Coffee, we talk with artists and innovators about the process of changing the world in terms of what they do.
Over Coffee will be on Christmas season hiatus over the next few weeks. During that time, we'll be rebroadcasting some of our most popular shows of 2016.
Women want a safe space to engage. Women don't appreciate the competitive, toxic environment of a startup community. So boot camp was our solution, that we would invite women who have not engaged with hackathons before to come and just be introduced to the concepts.
Here is a rebroadcast of our April 2016 interview with Beth Beck. Beth is the Open Innovation Program Manager in the Office of the Chief Information Officer at NASA. In 2015, Beth created NASA Data Bootcamp. The goal of this bootcamp was to take the scary part out of coding and technology, and besides giving participants new skills, one of the ultimate objectives was to get them comfortable with participating in NASA's International Space Apps Challenge. This is an annual hackathon for good. It's a weekend-long free event where participants team up using open data from NASA to come up with solutions to literally any problem in the universe. Our conversation happened at the Women's Data Bootcamp at the Cross Campus facility in Pasadena. Beth, how did you first realize that you were a disruptive innovator? What first interested you in this?
Well, when I was growing up, I wanted to be a horse. So that was the first key. My brother was going to be Roy Rogers, and I was going to be Trigger, his horse. And the coolest thing for me is that I don't have a childhood memory of my parents telling me that I couldn't be a horse. So I really think that growing up, I always just wanted something different. And then I won art contests because I won a contest in second grade because we had a turtle to color, and I had every single panel on the turtle I designed in something different. So I won in second grade, and then in fourth grade we were doing seashell art, and I made a lady's face out of the seashells. And so my mother kept all that, so I don't think the way other people do. So even growing up, my brain just doesn't see the world the same way, and so I never thought of it as disruptive. I just didn't see that until I hit NASA. And then I realized that it was quite disruptive, the way I think. I just don't see life in a linear way. I'm not linear at all. It's really hard for me to think in a linear way. So, and it's hard because linear people don't understand nonlinear. Like, I live in a linear world with a nonlinear brain. And so it's been this kind of 30 years at NASA, seeing that. It's been an interesting experience. Just how do I add value for, if a person thinks in black and white and I see in color, so in black and white they don't even know color exists, yet there's all these colors out there. How do you allow someone to appreciate something they could never see? And that's this kind of experience of disruptive thinking, is that everyone's in a place, but you're in another place, but they don't get that there's a value of the other place. So I don't know how to, it's just an interesting life journey. It's okay for me to not be like everyone else, even though society wants me to be like everyone else. So it's that constant struggle and allowing myself to just be different, and that's okay.
And that seems to be exactly what today is all about. Please tell me a little bit about what's going on right now as you and I are speaking.
Well, right now we're doing the data boot camp. So what I discovered, as I was explaining earlier, is that in space apps we have 80% men that take part of it. So what happens? We've got girls who are interested in technology that are really interested in, like I was, in doing things and making things, and then to go a non-technical path because, technical is not interesting to me. I like that, back to the, I don't like linear. I like the full picture, which means there's a little bit of technical and a little bit of art and a little bit of everything. So how did we, when I started looking at the numbers and noticing that the faces didn't even look like my face, how could I get more women to see that data and technology is a compelling thing? So what did that look like? So we did our study for about a year. We interviewed organizations. We did literature search. And we tried to figure out, how do we bring more women to the data table? We started off with a much bigger question. And then I just had to simplify because it was too complicated trying to figure out how to. I originally wanted to say right brain thinking is a, there's a problem solving capital that comes with thinking differently. And I wanted, just like you have social capital and intellectual capital and financial capital, I wanted a problem solving capital so that when people team together, they wanted to make sure they had the different kinds of thinkers on a team. Way too big. It was way too big a problem to solve. So then I realized for what we could do at NASA and for what I could specifically do in our office of the chief information officers that we could, I couldn't control women in technology. I couldn't control women, you know, women in science, but what we could do is women in data. And then how, and because no one was talking about that at all. And so then how, and specifically women at SpaceX. So if I could make a change, the only way I could measure it is, could we get more women at SpaceX? And the smallest question of all, not that small, when you have 14,000, maybe 20,000 this year that are participating. So that's when we kind of narrowed the question down. It's like, how do we engage with women who would come to SpaceX? And so as we talked to these organizations, what we did here was that women want a safe space to engage. Women don't appreciate the competitive, toxic environment of a startup community, that we're more collaborative and we're interested in creating and not beating. You know, the other team members are competing with them. So what do we do with that? So how, and women like to see other women as their role models. That's really important. We like to see that there's babysitting, and which I tried to get this year. And so we began to look at, if women want to have early engagement with the technology or the tools, you know, how can we make that available? So boot camp was our solution, that we would invite women who are newcomers, and we don't exclude men. I mean, it's really open to the public, but we encourage women who have not engaged with hackathons before to come and just be introduced to the concepts. What does it look like? What is code? What is data? You know, what are the tools that you might use if you were going to engage in a hackathon thing? So if you know what they look like, even though you don't know how they work, then it's not as intimidating to get in a team of men who know how it works. And if they could say to you, go get the alligator clip, you know what an alligator clip is, then you go, right, then you're part of the team. Rather than what's an alligator clip, they roll their eyes, and then you feel like you're not part of the team. So the whole point of boot camp is just to introduce concepts, to show women it's okay to be different. We have all these different roles that we can participate in a team. You don't have to be the best coder, but you know, we can be storytellers and designers, and we can be artists, because all of that's part of telling the story of a good solution. And then next year, if women are introduced to some technology they want to pursue on their own time, which is how women do, we work overtime, we in the middle of the night, we study, we do all this stuff while our family's doing everything else, we're burning the midnight oil, learning new skills, because that's just, or getting things done, that's just how we are. So we just want to introduce these concepts and let women decide what's interesting, take it on their own. We want to provide support. I know this is a long answer. The other thing that we really want to do is honor the work that other women and other organizations are doing in the field. So NASA, it's not our job to teach women to code. It's just not our job. There are organizations who do that, and they're really good at it. So that's the other part of boot camp, is we want to provide a platform for the organizations and the women that are doing really good work. Let them tell the good work they're doing so that others can come to them, because that's what they do well. It's not our job to even compete with organizations that do that. So I'm really fortunate that NASA is a trust brand, and people come to NASA because they believe in us, and they're inspired by NASA. So we can leverage that NASA brand to inspire women to rise up to another level of challenge they may not have thought they could even ever do. And that's really exciting for me, to even see women so far being excited about what they're hearing. So I'm super thrilled to see that women are encouraged and they're learning new things here already. So I've been around and talking to the different tables, and they're so excited. Even, I want to say, Doug Wheelock's wife, we were talking about it, and she's got a website, and she said, I never really thought I could do the coding myself for the website. She said, I want to now go and learn how to do that. I can do that. And I went, yes, you can. So here is, you know, someone in our NASA family who, just for being here, has already walked out with that encouragement that she's going to take another step to learn how to code enough to do what she wants to do with the website rather than paying someone else to do it. And that's what this is all about. The other thing that's interesting, this process, as we've kind of looked into, you know, how women work and what are the things that women kind of respond to and relate to, and I, you know, can't make generalizations. It's easy to do that. We did see trends. But I was talking to David Newman, our deputy, our new NASA deputy, and we were talking about this process and how to get more women engaged. She made a really good observation that I love. And it's that we normally say, if you see a girl in high school or junior high who's good at math, you say, oh, you should be an engineer. Or if they're good at XYZ, oh, you should be that. So we look at what they're good at and tell them that's what their career is. She said, I don't think it should be that way. It should be, here's this really cool thing that could be a vision for your future. If you want to make that vision happen, you may need a little math, you may need a little science, you may need to code a little bit, you may need to get some experience, you know, out in oceanography, you know, whatever it is, you don't have to be the best. Just get enough, do enough to get you where you're going. And that's actually what I've been doing with my dissertation. I had to do, I had 25,000 files that I had to do analysis on. I had to go get enough coding skills just to do the processing. And I'm not a coder. I mean, I code when I need to code, but I'm not an expert coder. It's not what I do for my career. But I can get enough coding, just like when I go to Germany, I'll do a little German, you know, language studying before I go, so I can, and when I go to Brazil, I do the same thing. I like to learn languages. I learn just enough to do what I need to do, and then I'm on to the next thing. So I think that's this point of we should be inspiring girls to be great at whatever they want to do. It doesn't have to be one skill. We, and this is my generic statement, generalization, that women don't like to be one thing. We're very, very good at multitasking. Linear thinkers, which are generally men, but not always, like to specialize in one topic. Women just like to span across. We want a little bit of everything. And it's just how we're, generically, and I'm making this generalization, which I always have to say, but I believe it's how most of us, or many of us, are built, is that we just multiprocess, and we're really good at it. So same thing with the career. We need, and we saw some speakers talk about that. Emily talked about she just didn't want to do one thing. She wanted to do all these other things, so she kept trying other things. And I think that's what we should be able to do, and it should be fine.
And it should be fun.
Yes, and fun, absolutely.
Beth offered some resources for anybody who would like to get started in learning code. If you had to find out how to do coding and you were scared of coding, where would you go first?
Okay. So there are so many coding organizations. There's Code Montage, Black Girls Code, Girls Code, Women Code, Women Develop It, Women Tech. I mean, if you Google our friend Google, there's so many organizations. And actually what we did when we were doing the research, I went on Twitter, because I'm all about social media. I went on Twitter and looked at Women Tech. If you do a hashtag Women Tech and Women Data, just hashtagging it, I did research with a hashtag. I went and found the organizations on social media. We looked up the heads of those organizations and we contacted them for interviews, because that, and in social media, that's where, you know, the little watering hole is for women in tech. So that's a really good way to find resources.
As Beth talked about the ways in which we approach being creative, one common problem came up.
Here's my story about art too. And I saw this doing, there's so much that I saw doing the research that we did for women in data. What I saw was that women, if they're not the best, they won't do it at all. That's another thing that we saw. And I know that about myself. I'm a recovering perfectionist. Some people will say that's not the truth. They think I'm still a perfectionist. But if I'm not, I won't go do something if I don't think I can do it well. I just won't do it. I'll go do something else. And so I never took art classes because, well, I was in band and I was in music, and I got, you know, kind of thrown it because I had perfect pitch. So they handed me an oboe, and so I played oboe. So I didn't really have a choice in any of that stuff. My parents are musical, so I did the music route. I wanted to take art classes. By the time I finally got to electives in college, all my high school friends had been taking art. So I wanted to take art, but I was afraid to, because I wouldn't be as good as my friends who'd been in art classes. So I've never taken an art class. And I regret that, because I love the creative medium. So I do a lot of, so I then did take classes through NASA, actually, for photography. I went to a Corcoran School of Art and did pinhole photography. I had my one artist show in Alexandria, Virginia, you know, years ago for my, I made my own pinhole cameras and, you know, I did all that. You know, you have to put in a piece of film in the one camera, close the top, figure it out, you know, how many seconds it takes with all these little pinholes. It's very scientific, which I didn't do it. It's just like, I tried it. I don't like how it looks. I tried something a different time. So I went the photography route and then I did videography. And then now I'm into painting, but I haven't taken any classes for it. So I think it's the art is an experimentation that, you know, if you can get into art school, I think it's really good. I also think that art, when I did photography, it was fascinating to me to kind of go through the classes and what is considered art is what the gallery owners think is art. So it's just like any other thing you go through. It's the establishment tells you what is good or not good. And so back to innovation, when you're on the cutting edge of a different kind of art even, it will not be appreciated until someone else decides that that is cool. Everyone turns their eyes on it and all of a sudden it's in vogue. So it's like if you believe in your art, if you believe in your work, if you believe in what you're doing and you're the first to do it, it's a very lonely place to be. And I mean, that's anything with innovation. Anytime you're, you know, trying something new, it's just people will laugh at you until all of a sudden they're not laughing and they want to do it. And I always tell people of innovation, it's like everyone loves success. Everyone loves to chase success. So if you can just do something small, like we're doing with Bootcamp, we're just trying it. Once we find success, we give the model out. Everyone wants to try it because we've now proven this little thing that we were trying actually worked. Everyone wants it. So it's just having the courage to try the things that no one else will. I know I'm saying a lot, but I actually love being where no one is because if everyone's there, it's already been done. So I'm much more interested in going this little place that no one else is, seeing what we can create out of it, you know, seeing a little crack that might be opened up for innovation. And once you crack it open, everyone floods through. Then I go find another crack. What's over there that we could do that we might kind of poke at a little bit and see if it's interesting? And sometimes the wall falls down and sometimes water comes through the crack. So it doesn't mean that everything you try is going to work. It's just okay.
What's a life hack that you're exploring right now that's a crack in the wall and nobody's there yet?
My dissertation.
How soon do you know about your dissertation?
Actually, I could be finding out now. So what I did my dissertation on is I'm looking at group practice and its effect on innovation and creativity. And so when you look at how groups work together, so collaboration is just messy, which is why I'm okay with messy. So whenever you collaborate with humans, humans are messy, you know, we bring our baggage, we have our issues, we have our expectations or, you know, mismatch expectations. So anytime humans come together to do something, it's just messy. So the interesting thing about innovation and creativity is that when you hit the point where you're not agreeing and you don't know where you're going. I did my analysis on this sentiment curve. So you look at when it's going all well, you've got very positive, and then you hit the negative and nothing's working and people don't like your idea and you hit all these roadblocks. And so when you hit the very bottom of the curve of you can't go forward and you're gonna crash and burn, that's a place where you have the most opportunity to create something new because you just can't go forward. If you could go forward, everyone would be doing it. So my whole research is about that disruption is a catalyst for creativity and innovation. And so that's what I've looked at. What is group practice? What's the effect of group practice? The effect is disruption. What's the effect of disruption on innovation? And that's actually, it is one of the key tools for the most creative innovation is that you just have to hit this place where you just can't go any further and then you figure it out and that's the eureka. So that's that crack I'm working on right now where how that group practice, how you can get people to not be afraid of tension and disruption, that it's okay. And again, the difference, and I had it on a chart, there's a difference between disruptive thinking and disruptive behavior. But you can still create even with disruptive behavior, because that's another conflict and another barrier for you. So if you can get past the behavioral issues and figure it out, you go someplace where you wouldn't have gone before. So that's kind of my passion of how it's okay for it to be hard And then when it's hard and you've prevailed, it's better than it could have been. So
our listeners are going to want to follow you on your social media and know anything you can tell me about Space Apps 2017, which they'll be sorry they didn't get into this year.
Well, I'm at Beth Beck, and then we're also at OpenNASA and at Space Apps. So 2017, you know, that's too early for us to know what we're doing, because we need to make sure how this, we haven't even gotten into Space Apps. So we always come back, regroup, see what worked, what didn't work, what do we want to do for the future. But here's what's new for this year. Last year, we created the first boot camp. This year, we have 42 boot camps. Last year, we created the first Project Accelerator Kit. So what we discovered, you know, when I was looking at SpaceX when I came in 3 years ago, it's like, it's just a weekend. So if we're going to spur innovation at the local level, we need something more than just 48 hours. So what do we do to encourage at the local level to let the local host actually incubate and accelerate some projects that they see? So we created this Project Accelerator Toolkit. Last year, we had 3 accelerators, you know, and these are in country around the world. This year, I think we're going to have a dozen. So this means that we have 42 boot camps, which is getting more people in early. And then we also have the follow-on with the accelerators. And then the other thing we've also added is that we've brought in, because every single local host finds their own collaborators. Some people call it sponsors. We call it collaborators to help them convene their event. We also have worked with our legal office that we can come in and curate top-level global providers, so that we could say, an industry provider could come to us and say, we want to offer this to the Space Apps participants. We could say, that looks like a great solution. We'll put you on the list. We're not brokering anything, but we're making this capability available to local hosts so that they can reach out to that industry provider. So another way for us to just make sure that at the local level, so many tools are available to them to be successful, which is what we want. So that's kind of what's new this year. After we reassess what we've done, there may be new things next year as we look at, you know, there's more we can do. There are more toolkits that we can come up with, because we're all about, if we've figured it out, we create the toolkit, the guidebook. If, you know, here's how we did this for boot camp, and then people can put their own speakers in, they can do their own topics, but here's a general way that a boot camp could look like. And then you go make it your own, culturally specific, with your special stars in your local area. And then, you know, we'll go create another toolkit.
This has been great. Beth, thank you for your time today.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you for talking to me.
You and I have been listening to Beth Beck, NASA Open Innovation Program Manager in the Office of the Chief Information Officer. During NASA's 2016 International Space Apps Challenge, Beth and her colleagues announced an exciting new program. This one's for citizen scientists and is called NASA's Data Knots. It's a free program that welcomes data newcomers to engage with NASA's open data and become a part of their problem-solving community. You can find more information on open.nasa.gov and type in /explore/data-knots. That's open.nasa.gov/explore/data-knots. Meanwhile, more than 15,000 participants from 61 countries took part in NASA's Space Apps Challenge in 2016. That's according to their Facebook page. And NASA has just announced 2017 dates. NASA's 2017 Space Apps Challenge happens April 29th and 30th. And location host applications will be open as of December 8th, 2016. You'll find more information on facebook.com/Space Apps Challenge. That's facebook.com/Space Apps Challenge. And that concludes this edition of Over Coffee. Thank you for listening. If you'd like to hear more Over Coffee podcasts, our link is twomaverix.com. That's twomaverix.com. And you can contact us at twomaverix@gmail.com. The music you're hearing is royalty-free production music provided by Pond5 at pond5.com. I'm Dot Cannon. Here's wishing you a cappuccino day.